Hi, Paul. Welcome back.
Hello. Hi. Good to be back.
How was the DevOx conference? You enjoy that?
I did. I haven't been there for probably since 2014.
Ah. That's a long time. I didn't recognize that. I thought you... Ah.
Yeah. So it was good to be back. It was if in some respects nothing had changed and yet everything had changed because the technologies that we were talking about 10 mm-hmm. years ago, although it was still Java, the mm-hmm. technologies and focus is obviously different a decade later. Mm-hmm. But Java's still there, as if it hasn't changed, but it's got mm-hmm. better. And the focus on technologies has changed, but not all. Still about connecting stuff together.
Yeah. For me, so for you, change a lot. For me, in the project world, not that much. In fact, what happens to me frequently, like DevOx, the conferences are actually pretty old, and sometimes I get reinvited back as you now, 10 years later. And for instance, I was 2 weeks ago in Romania and there was a Java user group meeting. I was invited there. But the first time I was in 2011. And what I did, I found the sample code from back then. And I reviewed my own code I wrote and then thought, you know, how hard would it be to migrate it to Java 25? And there was not that much difference because back then we already had, you know, JAX-RS and injection and Java is 6. And if you compare it to now, MicroProfile and so forth. So in this realm, it is not that different. Mm. Of course, on the Java SE side, it's completely different because now we have Java records. You can, this is very different, right? Of course, and in your case, everything is different. I mean, if you're working on the JVM level, and I think this is the great success story of Java, that for us Java developers, the code is mainly the same, but it's mm-hmm. getting better and better without doing anything. You know, we only have to install the newest Java, and everything gets better. This is actually a great story.
Yeah, it is. There's been some remarkable progress on the internals as well. We don't necessarily, we talk about all the features, what mm-hmm. you can do new in the language and APIs, but there's another underlying story of it just getting better and better over time in terms of performance. And also when we add new APIs, we often have to teach the JIT a little bit extra to improve it. So Panama came in 22, and then over time, its performance has improved greatly when you hit 25. That's what we're hearing anecdotally mm-hmm. from folks. So it's, sometimes it takes time to catch up, but it's that mm-hmm. flywheel mm-hmm. of improvements mm-hmm. and optimization mm-hmm. in the background, both memory mm-hmm. utilization, GC, better code gen, Leiden as well, optimizations coming in, which is different to what we've done before. It's all mm-hmm. coming together mm-hmm. very nicely.
And what I tend to do in my talks is I found a study where they compare energy efficiency and performance mm-hmm. of Java to different languages. And Java is quite good. It's like the fifth place. Mm-hmm. But I tried to, as I remember, there was like C, Rust, Ada, and Java. Something like this. This is the order. Pascal. I think Pascal is also somewhere there. No kidding. And I know Ada is place 4 because I always joke that, you know, if you would like to be, you know, the cool kid, just go learn Ada. This is all my running gig. But there were like C, Pascal, and Rust. I think these are in the order, of course. And the study is from 2017. So I tried to find, you know, because it's just a screenshot. So, okay, where I have it from, and I found the study and took a look at this. And then I thought, okay, this is an old study, but even better, because if you think about this, 2017, we had what, Java 17, I guess, right? Maybe?
Yeah, I can't remember. I have to look up the...
And now we have Java 25, and means, you know, I guess the performance of C, Rust, and Ada remains the same. And... that in 8 years, Java performance improved a lot. So yeah. I would say even what I'm showing on the conference is no more up to date. I suspect now that Java is even better comparing to other languages because I don't think there's a huge optimization, so no difference in C, or there's no effort on other side or Rust maybe. Rust was.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say so. I think probably there's enough talented compiler engineers on the Clang or GCC or Rust that take advantage of new hardware instructions.
Rust, I think Rust is a different story because there's lots of momentum. But I thought, you know, like C is already more or less done. So I don't know.
Well, maybe from a C++ isn't from a language design perspective. Yeah. C is fairly stable. But I think it, in terms of runtimes, no, I think there's engineers who are, you know, for example, the new ARM chips come out with SVE2, which has new vector hardware instructions for runtime.
Okay, you're right.
There will be folks looking at how to adapt their compiler, just like we're looking how to adapt the C2 JIT to take advantage of those instructions. So it's I would suspect, you know, it's like a little arms race. Depending on your code, it might be better than another, and then you change it 2 years, and then another would be better, and we just keep going, you know.
This would be interesting, right? Whether on the C side, if someone does, like, I don't know, ARM optimization, whether they are contributing or pushing back, you know, the changes to everyone on how this works, because... the C is like very specific. This is very low level language. There's less, I would say, maybe enterprise interest, like in Java case.
I agree with that. Yeah, that's true from an enterprise, but I don't know.
This could be interesting, you know. What's the situation there? Because I suspect if someone does a local or performance local optimization for specific hardware, maybe they don't push it up, you know, that everyone benefits. It's just this chip was optimized, but not Intel or whatever. So this would be interesting. What's the story there? Because Java is different, right? So I suspect if you find that, you know, you can optimize ARM and Intel could benefit as well, you would probably push it up because this is one platform. It's very easy, right?
It's not a trivial problem to optimize for chips, but there's enough expertise in the OpenJDK community contributing to Hotspot, both generally in optimizations that are architecture independent and optimizations that are architecture dependent. Mm-hmm. As a lot of folks on ARM and even NVIDIA is contributing to OpenJDK C2 optimizations for ARM, Neon ARM SVE. Intel is contributing on their side, and there's RISC-V contributions. Although I had no idea how you run RISC-V stuff, but there's, you know, there's activity going on there in these three architectures, in the PowerPC as well.
Are you right? ARM, there is some momentum there, and they are.
Oh yes, very much so.
Yeah. And this could be the main driver. But what I saw on DevOps that you delivered a talk about Babylon on Java AI.
Yes.
Sorry. And we already had a chat on Babylon, and I said, okay. This code reflection, you know, we had a longer chat, and say how to describe code reflection with two sentences, and because, you know, we had a long discussion. I think okay, this and I think I could do this. So I think with the big difference is reflection is just looking at method bodies and fields and manipulating them, but with code reflection, you can manipulate, you know, what's inside the method. This is the main difference. Is code reflection. You are able to transform or manipulate or get a structure. What happens in the method body, right?
Right, or the lambda body. Yes.
Yeah.
That's basically where reflection can only go at sort of the surface level of your code. Mm-hmm. I can get, as you said, get access to the field declarations or the classes and the method declarations, but it can't go deeper right now. And at runtime, give you access to, with permission, to what is the code of that method, what is the code of the lambda expression. Mm-hmm. And when you ask that question, you can reveal to you, you can reflect over that, and it gives you a structure of that code. We call it symbolic structure. But that's it. It basically expands reflection in two ways. One is it goes deeper, and one is it can go backwards to compile time as well. Mm-hmm. So we can extract... We're still working on the right APIs for it, but you can access the same structure at compile time and at runtime, the same form using the same API.
So paraphrasing, it would mean reflection would just works on an interface, and the code reflection is more about the implementation of the interface.
Yeah, you could argue that as a reason.
Just a note. Because both are actually in bytecode level, this is wrong, you know, because code reflection is not about the actual source code. Everything is compiled. This one is more about data flow and what happens inside a method. And the other one is just calling the method, the typical reflection we have, right? It's more like Glue code, or almost like scripting. We can see that reflection is almost like scripting. We can invoke methods, and the code reflection is like manipulating the behavior or data.
Yes. Yes, you can change your behavior. You can transform. You can't change the existing behavior of something. You can transform it into new behavior. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to be able to change the code of an existing method, but you can change it to a new method, and you can invoke that new method with different semantics if you wanted to, but the previous semantics remain the same. That's a key thing. So we're not mutating the program.
It's like transpiler, right?
Transpiling is like from one language to another, but it is transforming code into other code. It could be code that preserves the same functionality, mm-hmm. but does it faster, or it could be code that changes the program, does something else, like automatically differentiates your program. So mm-hmm. it's very, very flexible. It's up to you what to do with.
Even if it's wrong, so my mental model tells me transpiling one method to another, or transforming one method to another.
Transforming would be a better way of
transforming.
Okay, transforming. Reflective transforming is what I.
Why I said transpiling? Because if you will transform the Java method to CUDA kernel or something, this is more about transpiling, right? Because then it's no more. There's like two languages, or this is like quite. This would be completely different then.
Yeah, if you're going from the Java code to C code, you could think of it as transpiling. But it's not a literal conversion. There's more going on in that conversion, mm-hmm. which I think really means a transformation under the mm-hmm. covers.
But you could use code reflection to transpile, or is it?
Yes,
not?
Yeah, you can.
Exactly.
And to see the generating CUDA C code is kind of feels like that, but there's much more going on in how that generation works. And we don't have to generate CUDA C code. If we found a better way to generate something of an intermediate representation that works out better, we just don't know what that is yet.
Okay. And what's the progress? Because we had a chat a few months ago, actually. And is this like you're working just on the Babylon stuff? Mainly, or
that is Babylon stuff, vector API stuff, and sort of leading core libraries architecture stuff as well.
So you're working 24/7, basically.
No, but it's sometimes challenging to juggle things. I say that for sure.
Yeah, this is actually extreme. So if I think about it, so this is crazy. The SIMDD vector is already. Not easy, but I would say SIMD and Babylon are related somehow, right?
I think there's a relationship in if we look at what use cases can be enabled with these technologies. Mm-hmm. The Babylon code reflection is like a Swiss Army knife in a sense that it can be used for many, many things. Mm-hmm. But the use cases we're focusing on is the sort of AI mm-hmm. kind, enabling AI use cases. And that's where the vector API can fit into that. Situation as well, so they can connect together, like mm-hmm. Panama FFM, Panama Vector API, and Babylon can all fit together to build mm-hmm. build interesting solutions. Mm-hmm. And so we're not trying to build AI solutions into the platform. We have these general solutions that can be purposed for library developers to build interesting solutions mm-hmm. on top for AI. Mm-hmm. That's our sort of way of positioning things. Mm-hmm.
Have you heard about what happened with TornadoVM, what they did optimizations lately? You know this?
I don't know about the most recent stuff with TornadoVM.
Not that recent, maybe weeks or recent months. But what happened is, you remember that the Alfonso did the SIMD inference.
Llama 3.java or something.
Yeah, like exactly. And so I had a chat with the Tornado guys on AHEX.fm. Yes. And they wanted to be faster than Alfonso, but the SIMD was already great. So it was really hard to be faster than the SIMD because Alfonso did a great job. Mm-hmm. And what they noticed, because they optimized Tornado for specific use cases and not for inference. And what they did, they had that they used Tornado VM as an accelerator. Mm-hmm. So they had an algorithm. So they transferred the data to Tornado to GPUs, and got the result back, and they were done. This was the main use case. Were great, and they had a huge difference to CPU. But mm-hmm. for inference, they had, you know, to move the data back and forth between the GPUs and Java, and they lost a lot of time.
Yes,
and what they did, they're working right now with pointers, so the data can stay on GPUs, and they have a great acceleration story right now. And they're working right now on Metal. It means we get on Apple also. Because I tried on my machine, and this was boring. It was like, you know, 2% faster than Alfonso's code. So, okay, you are working, you know, day and night, and there is no difference. And but I say, look, we are working on Metal, but if you have NVIDIA GPU, you will see a 6 to 10 times faster inference. And this is crazy. And the question is, could we somehow, you know, also use it in Babylon? Or what would be the relation between Tornado and Babylon? Is there any link between?
Conceptually, yes. Architecturally, I can't speak for the Tornado VM folks specifically. From what I understand is they're already adopting platform technologies like Panama and memory segments. That's what enables them to get the... utilizing that to get the performance of reducing copies. And that's great. If they wanted to leverage code reflection to write their own compiler pipeline, it's up to them if they want to explore that, because they already have an existing compiler pipeline using Graal, and so it's more a matter of if they want to explore that technology and see if it's advantageous for them to use that as an alternative to what they currently have.
At least a student work, right? Because as a research project, some students could try to see and experiment with it.
I think they're doing great stuff, and there's a lot of synergy in the ideas we have in the HAT project and what Tornado are doing with them. And I think we can, there's lots of possibilities to collaborate on the ideas here. Because the ideas we're exploring in HAT are not, we want to communicate these ideas and explore them and share them so that either we can explore them and prove them out and others can copy them for their own needs in that way. Because that grows the Java ecosystem out in that way. So but I think there's a lot of synergy. I think Tornado done some interesting things with that LLM implementation. They've had to push harder in terms of writing Java code that translates to efficient CUDA code and leveraging the concepts of local memory on the GPU and memory barriers as well, because you can't achieve the performance without understanding how the GPU is arranged in terms of memory and how the threads interact with each other. Because that's the real challenging thing. So you need a programming model that you can express those in. And I can see the Tornado code is exploring that. And we've also been exploring it in HAT too, to express the same kinds of concepts, to get to squeeze out the maximum juice out of these GPUs.
I had a chat with Gary at Java One. This is Gary Frost, I
think. Gary Frost is leading HAT.
And there was a long line, during the lunchtime was food, right? And I said, may I express what he can do? And he has a great knowledge of Intel optimization and so forth. And this is crazy hard problems to solve, right? It sounds easy, but it is not that easy.
OpenAI have legions of Python developers trying to solve this problem, taking a Python dialect and translating it to very efficient PTX code at the back end. And they want the developers to write in Python, not write in PTX or CUDA C, because it gives the developer boost. Same argument for Java.
And I also had a chat with Tornado VM why Python is so fast on GPU. And they told me because they use the optimized NVIDIA libraries. And the NVIDIA libraries for the kernels, what they do is they have highly optimized hard-coded assembly,
which runs
on the kernels. And if you don't have it, I mean, you cannot reach the performance because you don't have, you know, the low-level assembly optimization. But
Correct. You can almost think of these as reaching out to native GPU kernels.
Yeah.
Like Panama can reach out to native code. So we can do the equivalent in HAT, and Tornado can do the equivalent. If you've got Kublaz there, you can call a Kublaz kernel to do the gem. Now, companies like OpenAI they're going to write their own kernels for their own special needs, and they're going to write it at a rapid clip. that.
Yeah, and they announce even their own hardware. Everything makes sense.
Absolutely. They want to abstract from the hardware as well, but they're moving at a faster rate than, say, Kublas or the libraries can keep up. And they want control. And you can get better than Kublas if you're very careful in what you do for the particular hardware.
And what Tornado guys are doing, they notice that the assembly is highly optimized, but they also can write their own assembly. They are really low-level guys. And what they try to do is to use AI to optimize their own assembly to make and try, you know, like agentic in a loop to try to optimize us. And they have a great progress. So we had a chat on the AirHacks event. Mm-hmm. So I would say this Tornado is a really interesting story.
They've been leading the way for quite a while, actually. Mm-hmm. And so, like, now we're getting interested in the platform doing this, or at least in OpenJDK. So I hope we can collaborate more. We've already collaborated a bit in conversation. I hope we can continue the kind of collaboration so we can improve it further.
And what I can tell you now happened a lot in companies. So I had a direct contact in some enterprises with how they call it, LLM or AI departments. Mm. And they experimented a lot with Python. And I asked them, this is interesting, but, you know, what about production? And mm-hmm. they say, right now we don't have any production. We don't care. It's like, the production will come. And if you look, you know, all our pipelines are Java. Mm. So we have all the security checks are Java. How you will run the Python in production? Yeah. And there was silence, really. They say, you are actually right. Because I think this is misunderstanding in enterprises, is what people hear is Python, but what you see right now, there's lots of experiments with Python, which is the right thing. So this is the researchers, you know, scientists, that they're working with Python, and they just, you know, but they are not software engineers. There's no releases, no versions. They do whatever they have to do. They're very fast, and they have then a solution. Yes. And to make it run, you need something. You could maybe make it run on Python, but not many companies I know are able to do this because there's no expertise to have, you know, Python in production, which is secure, all the dependencies, you know. And now it's the time. I think there's enough momentum and enough interest from enterprises. So it's really important that OpenJDK or Java or Oracle do the job. Because with Java, the inference is actually crazy simple. So if it is work like Alfonso code, you know, we can package whatever we like. This is like, you know, you have one file with numbers. If you will, we could create one jar and we are done. It's a huge jar, but no one cares. Yeah. But with Python, I don't know whether you tried to set up a Python. I have to say, I had to use an existing script to log in to a system, and I spent 5 hours installing the environment on Mac. Mm. There was then pip and pip dry and pip 3. And at the end, I was completely wrong because I forgot some environment. And in Java, you don't install Java very often, right? I guess once a year. But if I do, or if you do, you will find out how easy this is, right? Mm. So to install Java, this is like unbelievable easy. This is like it's basically tar and extract. This is all we have to do. And this is a huge success story, I would say. Yeah. And we only have to promote it a bit more because I don't think that everyone is aware what it means if we had Java for inference, you know?
Yeah. No, I think it will over time establish itself because there's so much Java out there in the business side that it will naturally pull. Yeah. And the mechanisms are there. The good thing is multiple choice. When you can have a pure implementation in Java like what Alfonso did. Mm-hmm. You could reach out to Onyx Runtime through Panama and run Onyx models as well. Or you could go the Tornado route. And so there's many levels of complexity. I think the packaging story around Java is okay. It could be a lot better, especially for packaging native components and large pieces of data together at the same time. We can do a better job there than we currently do.
There was some discussion regarding Nextjar, right?
Nextjar. Who was discussing that?
I remember it was not at the last Java one, but there was already a discussion to having, like, you know, jar next. But you don't remember this? There was a more efficient jar format or whatever. One was deprecated.
Oh, this might be related to JLink and JImage, perhaps. I don't think it's about sort of efficient jar format in terms of on disk. It's more about
no.
how do you package up your native dependencies, yeah. Your Java dependencies, all the resources you need, mm-hmm. and express where you got all that information from so that you have some provenance, so that yeah. you can trust what you have.
So more like EAR next, right? Enterprise Archive next.
Yeah,
so there's yeah, more stuff there. AI EAR. This is the EAR.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you know, AI like EAR, you know?
EAR, yeah. Yeah, you could think of it like that. But yes, we can. There's more stuff we can do to make that easier, for sure. Mm-hmm. It's simply a matter of redirecting and applying resources in the right places, yeah. which is not easy, for sure.
Oracle should just hire more developers and then it will work.
Yes, if only.
Yeah. you also mentioned the last time, Bliss.
Oh,
and I took a look
at the library. Yeah.
The Bliss library. What you did with Panama, and this was not far away from Python. So what you did, you had multiple layers, right? So on the lower layer, you just make it happen. So you just used ugly Java code to actually, it looked like C. And then at the end, you had the actual matrix class, which looked like Java, and it was one-liner, and everything was hidden. And this would be the Bliss experiments, or Bliss integration you did, would be the Python way. What Python does now is native. This is what Java could do with libraries like Bliss, right?
Exactly, yes. So that we're referring, just context-wise, we're referring to the DevOps session I presented. That's what I was talking about. And so I did talk into what you're saying in quite a lot of detail 2 weeks ago, in fact, almost.
And what was the name, the title of your talk?
Generically Java for AI, but it was really Java
for AI. Okay, then there is a Java for AI. You mentioned Bliss the last time, and I had no idea what it is. But it was like, this is a great library, and I look it up, and then I found your code as an example somewhere.
Right.
We're using metrics with a factory method, new and so forth. It's
right.
like, okay, this is like very Pythonic Java.
Yeah, what I'm trying to show is that you can do you can do NumPy in Java effectively.
Mm-hmm.
And you can choose, with a right abstraction, you can choose to reach out to a very fast and efficient linear algebra library for complex operations. But for other operations, you can keep it in Java. So you can have a hybrid approach. Mm-hmm. You could also, if we arrange it right, reach out to GPUs too. And so it is possible to build these kinds of libraries in Java. And part of my goal was in presentation to show people that what's possible. It's not that we're going to do it in the JDK, but I wanted to show the patterns to show that it's possible to do it today.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get good performance out of these things. So you can build like a NumPy or a Pandas-like library. And with the features today, you can do a good job. With the features that are coming tomorrow, you can do an even better job.
Mm-hmm. Are you aware of Deep Java Library, DJL.ai?
A little bit.
Because I played with it, and they have the matrix manipulation library, and it was crazy good. So I have to say. So you could say, you know, matrix filled with zeros, and you got it. Flip, you got it. You know, it was really fun to play. I had no idea what I did, but it worked, and I had fun with it. And the API was great, actually, how it felt. And I think this would be also actually a great job for students or someone, because this is like, you know, highly rewarding task. And at the end, you get maybe an open source library, which gets crazy popular, right?
Yeah, I think you can develop a good tensor. I focused on Matrix 2D because that's what Bliss does. But you can focus on a tensor library that uses Bliss underneath, because at the end of the day, you can compose n dimensions to two dimensions when you need to.
Mm-hmm.
So you can develop a good tensor library today, and you can leverage lambda expressions and other features so that you don't get this explosion of methods coming out from it.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's actually very rare in, I think, linear algebra to operate on individual elements directly. You're more operating on high-level operations. Underneath the covers, the implementation does that. The end user doesn't. So it doesn't matter we don't have expressions to make it look like it's a direct array access, because you never really do that. So if you up-level the abstractions, you can do a pretty good job. And with Panama, you can really sort of focus on the native memory allocation and get zero copy between the host and the native library, which was harder to do before, and overcome the limitations, size limitations that you have with heap arrays and byte buffers. Mm-hmm. So you really deal with large, super large mm-hmm. problems. And in fact, I used that Matrix API to implement a classic machine learning algorithm called MCET2 mm-hmm. that discovers anomalies in time series data. Mm-hmm. So that if you're monitoring something like a nuclear power plant, you want to know if the plant is operating right, or is it operating in deviating from its golden operation sort of status, and you want to get mm-hmm. intervention before something disastrous mm-hmm. happens. But it can apply to cars or data centers. And we implemented that, and it was blisteringly fast. It really beat the GPU implementations, in part because of the copying costs. Mm-hmm. Going to the CPU mm-hmm. to the GPU, but if mm-hmm. you implement it right with the right architecture on an AMD Zen 4 multi-threaded SIMD, it just works really well. And mm-hmm. so it was a proof point, and I know that other smart developers can do what I did and make a better job of it as a production quality thing.
Mm-hmm. Are you aware of the Jay Takochino, I think is the name?
I haven't heard of that.
It was at the DevOx, and this is... And what it is like Jupyter notebooks for but with Java and with JavaFX. It looks actually really good.
Yeah.
And they had multiple talks about that. And if you would combine that with your Bliss and higher level matrix manipulation, what you will get is almost like a Jupyter notebook with accelerated Jupyter notebook.
Yeah, you can do that. You can have notebooks and you can write your code that way if you wanted to for experimental purposes.
Yeah, for experiments, of course. But it will be easier, to move the experiments to production.
Absolutely.
Because you only have to compile and repackage. You are done. And also, you could migrate from Jupyter notebook in Python to Jupyter notebook in Java just by by moving the higher level formulas and then because everything behind the scenes would be complete different stack. It would be Python or Java. And by the way, this DJL, the deep Java library, I experimented with it, but the interesting part is they also have a lot I think behind the scenes is Onyx. They have an Onyx binding.
And you
have also to manage memory. So your way, with the arenas and FFMs is cleaner what they have, but it seems like they are using the proprietary GNI call to free the memory afterwards.
Yeah. You can. It's interesting. You can use Onyx as the linear algebra library runtime as opposed to Bliss if you wanted to, and that will give you a choice of CPU or GPU. It mm-hmm. might actually give you more cross-platform choices. Bliss is really a library for... it's not really utilized for the LLM kinds of machine learning yet because it doesn't have full support for the sort of shorter types of, smaller types of floating point numbers. But it does do mixed precision. So, and it's going to start to get interesting when it supports float 16, mixed precision accumulating into float 32s and stuff like that. It will get more interesting, I think. Mm-hmm. But Onyx will provide you more choices for the LLM style matrix linear algebra style operations. And so it's actually a good target.
Mm-hmm. What we actually wanted to talk about is, this is your leisure job, and this was Jason. So because you are full-time AI and AI developer and Babylon and all the other stuff. But what you did, you have a small proposal how Jason could look in Java. And the idea is it could be in one point of time, of course, included or bundled with the OpenJDK. So it would be Java Util JSON package. And I have to say, it's a great, great idea. And I think also it is right, because if you think about this, I think Java Util properties were introduced in JDK 1.0, not even 1.1. They were from beginning there, and they are working still great.
Yeah.
I have to say, I am actually using them now more than before, because, for instance, with Java 25, it is very easy to write your own JavaScript, like small script written in Java.
Yeah.
And you have to configure things. And what I tend to do right now with properties, I put my configuration to the user home folder, and every app that gets a dot folder with my properties, and this works, two liner, and it works perfectly.
Oh, Proxy scripts are great for that kind of thing. They really are a low energy sort of thing to slurp in data.
And JSON, some things I would use JSON for configure, but this MCP, right? This Model Context Protocol, for instance.
It is
remote procedure call with JSON. This JSON is simplistic. And for that, I could have the Java web server, J web server. I always forget, you know, the name of the embedded HTTP server which ships with JDK. There's programmatic API, and the module is called JDK.HTTP, I think. And so I use the server a lot for web development, but what you could do is you can launch your local MCP server just with JDK. This will be the embedded HTTP server plus JSON, and you are set, no external dependencies.
Yeah.
And this is, I think, important because performance, scalability do not matter at all. There's basically one threat, the LLM, but security matters. And before I add, you know, external libraries and I have to bundle and package them, having just JDK would be actually very good. So, and I use the embedded server more and more. For instance, right now I'm implementing in my projects OIDC. OpenID Connect, and the flow is crazy, like, you know, callback URLs, whatever. And it's very easy to use the web server to test the entire thing. So I would say the web server is great, and I think for specific requirements, I mean, scalability or performance, they never matter, because before you go to production, you will test the performance. On either the performance is good enough or it isn't. If it is good enough, you go to production. If it's stable, if it's not, you will use something different. So therefore, this is absolutely okay, and it's also extendable. The entire I have to say HTTP server is really underused. So it is sold like, you know, it's a demo system and it's a toy. It isn't. I think you could actually have a very specific use cases where you can absolutely use.
Yeah.
And what is really missing is JSON.
Yeah.
And what I do right now is this is it is crazy, but it works. There is an org.json library. And the org.json library is interesting because this is the actual reference implementation, and this is not widely known in Java. This is the interesting part. Because if you go to GitHub, there is one guy who maintains, or there are multiple, but this one has, I think, is the release manager of the thing, org.json to GitHub. And there's the reference implementation of a JSON package in Java. And this is JSON-Java. With the logo, and this is 4.7k stars. And the interesting part about this library is, if you clone it, you go to the folder, there are no dependencies. You compile it, and you are basically done. And what I do is, I can launch in Java 25 inside the folder or outside the folder my script, and I have my JSON.
Compile it all,
And it's just fast enough. And for the MCP server, for instance, I had to implement one. I just copied over a few classes from the library and deleted everything else.
Yeah.
So I think there are use cases where you don't need, you know, enterprise JSON or Jettison or whatever. You just need a basic JSON support.
Yep.
And something like in JDK, a minimal implementation, from my perspective, would solve a lot of problems.
Yeah.
And it would be minimal.
Yes.
The problem, but what we should be careful is what happens if we get better idea. You know, how to, is it possible then, you know, to this is the main challenge, right? Because what I will say is, it would be okay to ship something which doesn't come with all the features. It is like very basic parser and extended later. Because otherwise, we will, you know, spend a lot of time just talking what could be done and how it should be done, and it will never finish. Because the Java properties is also not great, the API. It is actually not great at all. You know, you instantiate the properties and then load as a little bit better with files, new input stream. Then you pass it to the properties, you are done. But this is actually not nice API. But it is good enough, and it solves a problem, you know?
I think you've hit the sort of... what you're saying is what's on our mind here is something that's very, very low cognitive overhead, minimal API. And in fact, we started out with almost no API thinking that we could use pattern matching to operate on it. And that may be true in the long term as pattern matching features roll in, but in the short, near term, medium term, it's not the case. And so we're looking at adding some simple usability API points to it to make it easier to basically use it in a pragmatic way, because we found that most people, at least the use cases we've been looking at, most people, there's no JSON schema, and often the spec is examples. You go on GitHub, yes, or Artifactory, and they show an example of JSON. So you have the example in JSON in one window, and you code in another window to that example,
yes,
coding away in your JSON, yes, doc.
You look at the MCP specification.
Run it. Yeah.
You ever saw this?
I haven't looked at it.
Because the MCP specification is the industry standard right now. I think there are billions of dollars implemented in MCP specifications.
You know what it reminds me of is, it reminds me of a web, web services, like when that
SOA
was,
yeah, like, but SOA was the other direction. There was more specification than projects, actually. And, you know, but if you take a look at this, there's basically no specification. I said, you're all crazy. As you said, there were just examples. This is the JSON example, and the schema is nowhere.
Yes.
And I implemented the MCP server, and I said, come on. I would say, the JAX-RS specification, what we had, this was like, you know, orders of magnitude better than this. This is basically a tutorial with a few examples.
Yeah, exactly. And you go to the examples based on that. And if it fails, you update your code based on the example.
But this is the reality right now, I have to say, and there are hundreds, thousands of projects, and no one complains about the. I heard complaints that MCP lacks some functionality, but what stuck me? No one complained about the quality of the spec. No one cares, and this is, if you take, this is no joke. This is like, I would at least expect that someone describes, you know, this attribute is optional or not. But this is like the example, and this is basically it. And I said, okay, this is crazy. Yeah, I mean, this is like.
So, yeah, that's the same pattern we've observed when we did examples using our own. There's actually a JSON API in the Scara implementation that manages all the OpenJDK GitHub interactions and issue interactions. And our API, what we're proposing is similar to that, but with a sort of a bit more a sort of robust thinking around it, because that was written quite quickly for their needs. Mm-hmm. And so it's not dissimilar to that. Very, very low overhead, very easy to use for these simple cases. I used it myself in a more pattern matching case, record mapping. I actually used it to take Onyx schema in Python. In Onyx, there's a schema of all the operations and what their inputs and outputs are and everything. So you can reflect on it. And I wrote a Python program to spit out JSON. And then I loaded the JSON into Java using the JSON API, mapped it to a record structure really easy, in less than 50 lines of code. And then I was done. And then I was up to the races in generating APIs from the Onyx schema for our purposes. It was great. Low cognitive overhead, small program. Performance is not a problem. It ingested megabytes of JSON. I didn't even notice for my purposes.
Your approach was interesting. So I saw your email on OpenJDK mailing list, I think. And what I remember is there was a method, and the parameter, I think, was JSON value.
Yeah.
And you had the pattern matching, and you could match more, like, you know, multiple stages. It's like, or multi-level matching, which was really interesting approach. And this approach always works. It's nothing to do with the JSON approach. I could use it for whatever I like. So, I mean, this is one possibility to do that, but you don't have to. This is the cool story, right?
I think it worked very well. That functional style pattern matching worked very well on almost no API, because the API is just derived from the JSON specification.
And your API were Java records, right? It was just Java records.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mapped to Java records. It was very straightforward, and it was my opinionated data binding, and I didn't need to go beyond further than that, which is great. And so that API is great. It works for pattern matching. It's not ideal yet. And with some helper methods, we can make it more practical for other kinds of uses. There's like two kinds of audiences, the functional pattern matching audience and the more pragmatic, comparing your JSON with and writing your code, making sure that it works, and having it very explicit. But if you're almost making, when you're parsing the JSON through the DOM, you're making assertions. I want an object here, its name is this. And if it isn't, I want to throw an exception and fail fast because my assumptions aren't correct. And I just bomb the program out. And we were kind of initially surprised at that programming style at first, but that's what you do in small programs. You just fail if you not your expectations aren't met. And JSON's messy.
What's the alternative? You have to fail, otherwise you.
Well, you do. Yes, you. I don't know what the alternative is, and you either fail implicitly by throwing an exception that's mm-hmm. caught something higher level or exits the program, rather than you having to do if this matches handled that it's not matching, and often the handling case, the else is throw your own exception. That's what people were coding to. And so we might as well make an assertion style API for these kinds of cases until pattern matching gets good enough that we may be able to roll that in and into the sort of core features of pattern matching. But that'll take a while to get there if we ever get there. So this sort of very pragmatic style, we weren't thinking about initially when we were designing the API, but with just a few small set of methods, we can get both approaches. And I think it's a very small API surface, really remarkably small. And yet it's very useful. And the feedback we're getting internally is it's just like, because it's so small, you can get stuff done really quickly, even if you have to wrap in your own concepts. It's so quick to do that wrapping. It's not a problem.
What do you mean by wrapping, for instance?
I mean, maybe the API doesn't give you some utilities that you keep reusing over and over again. Yeah. And so you just like wrap it a little bit and you move on. And because that cognitive overhead of that wrapping is so low, mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. People aren't sort of, and because the API doesn't have a lot of opinions, mm-hmm. it's just very easy to sort of low friction use to use and you just move on.
Is something like this possible, that the core API, I think this is stable because we have records with types. The types are set in stone in JSON more or less, and this is like, you know, would be the version, whatever it is released right now. And what about putting the opinionated way in preview mode or whatever, right? So you could keep separate the utilities from the core. So this is the core, and you will ship, let's say, in Java 26 or 27, the opinionated part as a preview feature or whatever you call it, experimental and an external module. And then you could experiment, get a feedback, and throw away, if it doesn't work, the opinionated part, but keep the core because this is stable.
Yeah, it might be that I think what we're going to do is take the core and go out at least one incubation release.
Yes.
But we're not going to, in this one, it's not going to have any sort of notion of, say, paths, JSON paths or pointers or anything like that.
No. Mm-hmm.
Very simple. And then we'll see, no data binding, no nothing like this.
No,
then we'll see.
Yeah.
So then we'll see. And then maybe over time we start thinking about more stuff, but the data binding stuff may fit in with the marshalling stuff. We're rethinking serialization. So rather than we need to think how that fits, this API fits with the serialization, which could new serialization and deserialization. So we may have a different way of approaching the problem. So we don't want to do anything there.
Yeah.
And so I think what we'll see is if we put something base in, we'll see what people are adding in terms of utilities that are common across a whole function, a whole set of folks, and see if there's anything that needs to be added to make so they don't have to keep repeating themselves over and over again. But that will take time to evolve out. And so we can get away with a couple of classes and a few methods and a reasonably efficient lazy parser underneath the covers that slurps in stuff.
You're right. The new serialization could be pluggable, right? You could have a JSON serialization or whatever. And this is a very good idea, actually.
And then that's where the opinions in data binding come in. And everyone has an opinion on data binding. Yeah. And what
I have to tell you, in all larger projects, we switched from data binding JSONB to JSONP. Right. And the reason being is not Java. This was not Java fault. The fault is evolving the APIs. What happens at one point of time if the project is big enough, you will have to support three versions at a time.
Uh-huh.
But if you bind the JSON to Java classes, you have classes with the same name with different amount of attributes.
Yeah.
But if you have a JSONP, this is basically a hash map.
Yes.
And this is way easier. Because what you can do, you can have, you know, and okay, in version 2, I rely, you know, on 5 attributes, and in version 1, only on 3, but I can configure the entire thing. Which attributes are optional, which are not. But if you're using a Java class is a harder, because if you will ship, you know, the version 2.0 and you need a backward compatibility to version 1 and this is bound, you are never sure, is it not there, the attribute, or is not supposed to be there? And this is why I have to say, in all serious projects right now, we use the HashMap approach, which is JSON-P from Jakarta. And JSON-B in the simpler project, where you have to go fast and you have only one version to support.
That's kind of like the opposite of what you would have expected.
But this is like it is. Because if you would like to evolve the libraries with JSON-P, it is actually way easier. And you have to test a lot, and therefore it doesn't matter. And if in your unit tests, what we do, we I intercept the production payload, store the JSON in a file, and load it to JSONP. You know, I never construct this by hand for my tests.
So when you say JSONP, you're loading it in as a DOM-like structure, not a streaming-like structure.
It's so just like, how was it? JSON.read, create parser, create reader, and
JSON object, which is effectively a hash map of...
Yeah, exactly. This is the typed hash map internally.
Yes.
So you know to construct it in memory is JSON create object builder add build. This is the for reading is JSON dot JSON reader at object. And by the way, if I read with JSON create reader, the interesting part is I get JSON values as well.
Yes.
And this is why I remember your pattern, because what I do right now is if the JSON value is JSON number, I can do instance of with the casts, and I call the method. So I do this right now if I read something and only interested in specific parts.
Yep.
But I only matched in one level, and I found your idea interesting, you know, and that you can have multi-level matching.
Yep, you can.
So I think it would be a good idea to have just the core classes, which never change with basic, I don't know, parsing support, whatever, and the JSON binding. I think if you do this, it's a huge debate because you get circular dependencies and many-to-many, one-to-many, and why not? And events and lazy, eager, you can spend,
It's also a nightmare binding from even strings to dates and times or numbers.
Yeah, exactly.
Thing. So you get into this rich sort of design set of problems, which...
And you get JSON-B. JSON-B, we were there. Do you have adapters for dates, adapters for the serialization?
It's really complex. And you will satisfy some people, but not others. It's almost as if you make everyone unhappy in that API, because no one's ever satisfied, because it never does what they want.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's a challenging problem. I don't think we want to go there. And if we do, it's going to be through marshalling. And if we do something, it may be simpler in terms of its constrained opinions and may be good enough for this low cognitive use cases.
Mm-hmm.
It's very easy to map to records if you've got a one-to-one structure between a JSON object and a record and lists and arrays,
mm-hmm.
and then opinionated how you map strings, how you map the JSON leaf values. And because the code is so small, it's arguably, you can do it yourself. Just copy the pattern and write your own opinionated binder for your own needs.
Yeah.
We don't need a general framework with 10,000 dials to configure for you. It's quicker to write your own one.
And but you plan to ship a basic parser and serialize it? Yeah, this would be great.
Basic parser, first of all, we haven't really focused on the writing side as much.
Mm-hmm.
On it, but you can build explicitly what you parse, and then you can two-string it. That's as far as we've got writing.
Exactly.
And that may be fine for low if performance and throughput is not an issue. That just works fine. So it's I think it's good enough.
Yeah, usually I would say for this use case, this is good enough. Otherwise, I can always use a third-party library.
Exactly. That was our idea. It's not to obviate the need for...
It's like the web server, the HTTP server. It's exactly the same.
Yeah. If you want Jackson, use Jackson if it meets your need. It's a good quality maintained library from an excellent developer. So it's not obviating it at all. It's just there's other... The space of possible solutions is big enough for this choice, I think.
A few years ago, I think I was one of the few who... mentioned, you know, publicly, no dependencies. You can just, stick with Java. But now it becomes more and more modern, to openly commit to having no external dependencies, even in JavaScript. So they're talking now that we don't like external frameworks. And I think it means for us, we have to do a little bit more in Java core to make it more like a platform and less like just language, you know?
Well, it depends, actually. We can potentially rethink what it means to depend on something.
Yeah.
Whereas we, as a community, we control the whole platform. So there are huge advantages in some cases to having a zero dependencies on what you trust. But if you can extend that trust out to third-party libraries like certified collections or something like that, I think we've talked
about. The certified collection for me was Jakarta E.
Could be.
This was the entire trick. It was so successful in my projects because, okay, we trust back then Sun.
Yes, exactly.
Glassfish patches the server, nothing else, just this. And this was actually my clients were so happy. This was the entire story.
There's markets out there. You see, I can't remember, the ChainGuard is an example of a company that's doing these builds, trusted builds of packaged software. Mm-hmm. And there's a market out there for this. And I think there's a similar market for Java dependencies too.
Helidon.
And Helidon as well, you know, Micronaut, another one. It's just the infrastructure is not there to easily get access to those. I'd say Maven and Gradle is a solution that is great for more complex projects, but is not a solution for simpler projects.
Exactly. So why I a huge fan of Java 25 in the how to call the simplify the instance main methods and the declarative module which are available if you are working with the how it's called properly the when the module is already available, you know, the base module is the availability of the module in instance methods. What is the proper name of the JAP? You remember that?
The
fact that it's there right now, I don't have to import, is already assumed.
I referenced it.
I also forgot that.
I can't remember the JAP number now.
But for the listeners, if you have an instance main method, you can already rely on all packages which are in Java-based module. They are automatically available. This convention.
That's right. There's a convenience there. And you can import module statements as well.
Exactly. And this is actually great. And what I did, I started with the scripting approach way before Java 25 was available. And what I did, this, even my GitHub, like Java plain module, which was empty, Maven module.
Yeah.
And just, you know, to ship a simple class, I had already, and have nothing against Maven, but I don't like too much are the Maven plugins without a reason. So I had to use a Maven plugin to make a jar executable. So I said, okay, this is a crazy because my class was like 3 lines of code, maybe 20, and the POM XML was longer. And this was actually a bad sign, right?
Yes.
And what I did for fun, I created on my GitHub account a Zibi, zero dependency builder. Uh-huh. It only uses what's in JDK, the Java C compiler, the jar, and it compiles, it finds classes, finds main methods, creates executable jar in 100 milliseconds. And no dependencies, I can even run the Zibi without compiling it because there are no dependencies. It just uses JDK. And for such small things, you know, we don't need external frameworks. This is what I'm saying. And such things can be valuable. It doesn't mean that this is a toy. For instance, I use this approach for infrastructure as code for production projects, but it is complex logic, but not many dependencies, right?
Yeah. I think there's a market for this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Sure.
Perfect. So this was all our AI sync, quarterly AI sync, and with Jason. And how we can help with the Jason that we get it, you know?
I think it's just using it. The best way to
But the link from the email was broken to your GitHub.
I probably changed.
Uh-huh. So what we need for the listeners, maybe, a link to a repository where you can play with, because I couldn't find it. I only saw the source code in the email. All the links were 404, and the links to JDK, how it's called, JDK base or something, with JSON branch, there was no JSON there.
So
you can send me after after the recording a link, and I will put it to the show notes for the listeners so they can already play right now with the future of Java.
Is it?
Perfect.
Has persist, so it's in there, and you can search for JSON object in the go to.
And I could also record a screencast or whatever. It's no problem, right? There's no like half NDAs. No problem.
No. There's nothing. No. So you know, in terms of use, we have you really understand the goals of a project, and so feedback wise, it's not helpful if someone has their own goals and coming to sort of tell us what they want out from if they're different goals. It's more about using it. What worked well and what didn't, and we've updated it now to add these sort of fail fast helper methods on JSON value, which make it more pragmatic to sort of code against when you're not using patterns, and so it's very usable now. We're finding we've done a lot of sort of implementation using it ourselves in anger, in some cases. So I think it's actually quite usable now with its minimal. And so give us feedback on what works. And it might be okay that you keep repeating things. I want a path like expression thing. And then go, but can you do it without that? Yes, I can. That's good feedback.
What I do is from time to time, I create like open source project just you know to keep it on GitHub to remember that it's actually there, like the ZB. It is not like I have big plans you know to replace Maven. It's just okay if it's there, I can just use it easier. Is it okay to use this code in such a project? You know what I mean?
You can clone it as long as you keep the license and abide by the licensing. You can clone the API. I cloned this API. I put it in for running
and
stuff.
What is the license? It has to be compatible with my license.
Open,
so
it's the open. Oh God, what is it? I'm looking at the license file. I am not a lawyer, so I cannot tell you whether it's compatible.
The license is GNU General Public License, but this is not a problem. Because I actually don't care. I could also
for example,
my project GPL.
Purposes, yeah. So it's small enough that you can clone it. And
yeah, this is what I do with the org.json.
I cloned it at least 3 times now in various cases. I know other folks who've cloned it and used it in various places too.
Super. So, I will clone it immediately.
It's efficient, and we're not designing it for performance, but it slurps in megabytes. We don't notice it with the modern Java platform for these kinds of purposes. But yep. I'd be interested to see an MCP use case and see if that's satisfactory for if org.json is satisfactory. I think this will be satisfactory too.
Yeah, and org.json is ancient, and the API is not very Javaistic, I would say. But I'm still happy because this.
Yeah, I think this API may even be simpler and less.
Way better. I said this is what I can tell you. It is this org.json is object oriented, but not that intuitive. And I already saw liked what I saw in your email. So I liked it. Yeah.
There's almost nothing to it in some respects.
Perfect. Thank you. It was lots of fun. And
yes.
We managed to be more structured than usually, or at least I, right? So we covered 2 big topics. And I will play with it, and maybe if get some ideas, I will give you a feedback in the podcast.
Yes, maybe. Please. Yeah, what worked well, what didn't. Yeah, what you like.
We also record some shorts, maybe with that. You know, to animate people, maybe to give feedback or whatever. So let's see.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you a lot.
Welcome to you. Yeah. Take
care. See you next time.
All right.
Oh,
bye-bye.
Forgot where people can find you on the repository.
OpenJDK email list is the best one. I stopped using Twitter.
Okay. OpenJDK mailing list, and your name is Paul Sanders. You're also the creator of JaxRS.
That's right. In my past life, JaxRS.
But I see you daily almost because I work a lot with JaxRS.
It's amazing how it's still going. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
thank you a lot.
All right. Take care.